So, Dave.
Yes.
Most of the time, these episodes start with you asking me a question.
They do.
And you're always trying to do something whenever you pick whatever question you ask me. I'm never quite sure what you've got in mind, but what are you trying to do when you ask me these questions?
I'm trying to get people on board and want them to go to the place that we're going. I want them to be interested.
Why?
Because I think the things that we have to say matters, and I believe that I need to prove it to them or at least pique their interest right off the bat. If I'm not willing to put in that work, then why should they be willing to put in the time to listen?
But isn't it enough that the rest of our conversation is just going to be great?
I wish that that were the case. Believe me, I wish that that were the case. And I know that that isn't the case. So you got to work hard to get people's attention. It is an attention economy.
Well, man, I'm so glad for the work you put in to this podcast to get people to listen. And that's what we're talking about in today's episode is introductions, how to get people's attention, how to make them want to listen, and how to get that sermon started off strong so that all the work that you put in actually keeps people's attention. So you in?
I'm in.
All right, let's do it.
Hey, this is the next episode of the Preaching Through Podcast. My name's Dave, and that is Luke Simmons, and it's good to be here again for another episode, my friend.
Yes, it is good, and thank you everybody for listening. I'm so just grateful for folks who tune into this and actually share with us from time to time that it's helpful and share it with other folks. So, man, that's what we're trying to do is there's enough out there that makes preaching hard, and if we can just make it a little bit easier and sharpen your skills a little bit, man, I hope we can.
I think that's a great framework of let's just get 1% better in whatever area. We don't have to get 20% better, 40% better, 80%. That's the big stuff. But if we just incrementally get better in these small areas, then over time, that compounding effect grows and grows and grows. And you get good at the things that maybe were struggles, so you can focus on other areas.
Absolutely.
That's what we're hoping to do. And today we're going to do that with introductions, or at least we're hoping to do that with introductions. Just as we talked about in the beginning, I honestly wish that it weren't the case, because the introduction part, like that takes, for me, that takes the most amount of work. And I wish that it were enough to just have someone show up and say, no, I need this information, so I'm going to sit through it. But I think that this highlights one of the key differences between teaching and preaching. Do you want to tell us what you see that key difference being?
Well, people debate this a lot, right? Is there a difference between teaching and preaching? And a lot of time, like especially with younger preachers, like people are trying to evaluate their gifting and assess, well, are they more of a teacher? Are they more of a preacher? And unfortunately, I think the rubric most people use is like, well, if they're kind of boring, then they're a teacher. And if they're interesting, then they're a preacher. And I go, well, I don't think that's quite it. Here's what I think is the difference. I think teaching assumes people are interested and preaching doesn't. Teaching assumes, well, they signed up for my class. They showed up on this thing. I think even to a degree, we could assume that a little bit on a podcast like this, that if someone has gone to the effort to download this, find this, click on the link to get to it, they're going to be relatively interested. Though I'm assuming this is somebody's first time listening, and maybe they won't be. But teaching assumes, yeah, that I already got them. Preaching does not assume that. And I don't think you can assume on a Sunday morning that you've got everyone's attention. This is one of the curses of being a pastor, is you get up early and you pray through your sermon and you drive to church usually by yourself and you pray through it and you listen to a few of the worship team songs and then you gather with the team and the band and you pray together and then you talk with people. And by the time that first song hits, man, you're there, you're ready. Well, what's it like when you go on vacation? When you go on vacation, you know, you're scrambling to get the kids out the door. You're yelling at each other on the way to church, right? You're late to get the kids checked in. One of them forgot their shoes, right? And then you're like scrambling. Oh yeah, now I need some coffee. And you're kind of stumbling in. And you're just, your mind, your heart, it's not there. Even if you, like, you have a thing for God, you want God, but you're just not dialed in just yet, right? And so that's why, as preachers, we need to view it as, I've got to get their attention. I've got to grab them, you know, make them want to listen, make them see the value of this, make them lean in, give a little bit of a promise of, here's why this is going to be worth your time. And that's the difference between teaching and preaching.
But that's the work of the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit should be doing that. That's not your job. The job of the preacher is just to show up and preach the word.
Well, I think if we believed that, we would really just get up and read the Bible. We wouldn't explain it. We wouldn't use any kind of illustrations or any kind of explanation. But that's actually not the model we see in the Bible. I mean, Ezra 8 is a great example. Ezra 7, Nehemiah 8, where they are opening the Bible and they're explaining it and they're helping people understand the sense of here's what's really happening. And so I believe the Holy Spirit is working through our preaching. And the Holy Spirit, one of the things he'll use to get people's attention is our introductions.
One of the things that I think is the greatest gift that anybody in any type of speaking capacity receives is the Sunday morning sermon, where you have presumably 30 to, I guess, 55 minutes, depending on what your church does. You better be really great of undivided attention. I think that's probably one of the most generous gifts that anybody receives in this attention economy. And so the idea—
Well, but you're assuming a lot there.
What do you mean?
You're assuming they're giving you undivided attention.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't think they are. I think they're giving you time to talk.
There you go.
They have the world's most distracting slot machine on their body, in their pocket, called their phone. And in any given moment, they're going to like look at it. And they might even be reading the Bible on it and trying to not look, right? Like, I mean, yeah. Anyway, but you're right. Like, if we can get their attention and keep it, that's an incredible gift.
Corporations around the world would just absolutely love to get what people are giving, just showing up in the room. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
You've got adults in a room who presumably are there with some capacity of, there's a reason why they're there. They might be there to conform to what their spouse is asking them to do. They might be there because they're looking for answers, but they're there for some particular reason. And the introduction is your first opportunity to say, here's why what I'm about to talk about is better than your iPhone, or here's why what I'm about to say is more important than getting up and going to the bathroom, because all of those are real temptations for people sitting in the chairs.
Well, they are certainly going to give you 2 minutes.
Yeah.
They might not give you 40, but if the 2 minutes at the beginning give them a reason to give you 40, they're more likely to give you 40, right? So that's why this matters. It's just, get their attention, make them feel like this matters, this is important. By the way, these introductions, as we'll see, don't have to be super long. They don't have to be super elaborate. I think one of the reasons some sermons get too long is because preachers have too long of introductions. But something that says, here's why you got to listen. There's also a subtle thing. I'm curious what you think about this, Dave. There's a subtle thing that's going on as people are listening, especially newer people, where they're really, like, at a subconscious level asking, can I trust this person? They're not consciously asking that, but like, do I believe this person? Do I care what they think? Do I care what they have to say? And of course we're saying, well, don't care about what I think, care about what God says. But they're intuitively going, do I trust this person? I'm curious for you, like, how do you discern early on, like, I do trust this person, or I'm not sure I do?
So I'm sure it's different for everybody. For me, it's can I get the heartbeat of the person? Like, if I cut them open, what's really going to bleed out? What am I going to see? And I think that's why it's easy for me to sit and be excited about every sermon, because I know your heartbeat. I know Seth's heartbeat. And even when you bring somebody else in, I'm giving them more of a benefit of a doubt because I trust you already. But you're right. If they don't know you, they don't understand what really gets you going, they don't understand what to expect. Absolutely. We have had some guest speakers, and very early on, I've kind of thought, like, you know what, this really isn't for me, but I respect the church. And so I'm going to try to get something out of it.
Yeah.
And so in my opinion, yeah, that trust is huge. And I think it's even more so to people who don't have a kingdom perspective and don't have the mentality of, God is trying to teach me something today. It's not Luke up there. It's not Seth. It's not John. It's not Chris. God is trying to say something to me today, and it just so happens to be coming through this person. If you don't have that perspective, like, that's going to be a really tough hill to climb.
One of the things that I think a lot of preachers struggle with is they realize the importance of these introductions.
Yeah.
And they've been told, you know, people are going to decide in the first 60 seconds if they like you. And that's kind of true.
Yeah.
But they end up translating that as, okay, I need to be impressive.
Right.
And I don't think you need to be impressive. You need to be trustworthy. And trustworthiness is mostly about your character. It's mostly about your heart. It's mostly about your prayer life. It's mostly about your integrity. And so I want to encourage you. You may not have the biggest razzle-dazzle personality. You may not be someone that right out of the gate, everyone's going to be like, ooh, wow, he's a bolt of energy. But you can still come across as trustworthy and therefore likable and worth listening to. And so that's not, introductions aren't mostly display cases for, you know, a big personality. But they are an opportunity to say, here's some reason you should listen. Here's why this is worth your time. And as we're going to look at today, there's a lot of different ways to do this. And that's what I want to try to do in this episode is expand some people's horizons. And so actually what we're doing a little bit is borrowing out of one of the supplemental pieces mm-hmm. of our Preaching Lab course. So the Preaching Lab is something that people can get on demand that walks through all sorts of things related to preaching. And then we also do it as a live cohort from time to time. There's a whole section on introductions and conclusions and everything that happens in between. And this is one of the supplemental things. We're not just playing it. We're going to kind of talk through it.
Right.
But part of what we do is try to say, hey, here's some examples. And Dave, you've been a real proponent of, hey, we got to give people
thought you were going to say thorn in my side.
No, not at all. No, you're a friendly thorn. No, but you're going like, we need to see some examples.
Yeah.
And so, this feels a little weird to me, honestly, because part of what we're going to do is we're going to play some clips of my sermons and, I certainly don't feel like, I mean, we had an episode recently about your voice. Like people need their own voice. Don't try to be me. This is not me necessarily trying to hold myself up as like, boy, everyone should be more like me. But I do have some reps under my belt and I do have some experience, which is why we even do this podcast. And my hope is that by showing some of these examples, it just expands people's horizons a bit and they feel like there's not just one way to do this.
Yeah. Just to underscore, I think it's valid to say you've got some reps underneath your belt. It's something that you've worked at. But I think for anybody who's listened to more than maybe 5 or 6 episodes have heard you say in many capacities, hey, this is just one way to do it. This is a way that has worked for us. And that's really the heart behind this. I can appreciate what you're saying. It's like, hey, I don't want to prop myself up. But I do think there's something to say, no, this is something you've worked intentionally at. And I would challenge you, pastor, preacher, listening right now, to work at it with the same level of intention, the same level of honesty, the same level of integrity, and just use these examples as one way you could do it. So let's get into preaching through the introduction.
A few years ago, a new pastor joined our team. He'd been on staff at another church for a number of years, had a lot of experience preaching. And before he preached for the first time at our church, I said, hey, after your sermon, we'll sit down and just debrief it and talk it through. And we did that. And I was able to give him some coaching feedback that just to me felt totally normal. But afterward, he said something that blew my mind. He said, I got more feedback from you after that one sermon than I've gotten all these other years that I've been involved in preaching. Now that stunned me. I grew up in an environment where you got lots of feedback and you got lots of coaching, but I realized that's actually not a common experience for most pastors. Most of us, we only get a little bit of a, hey, pastor, that was pretty good, or we get a nasty email, neither one of which are very helpful. And so I've created an experience where you can have the same kind of experience that he had, getting some tangible feedback as well as some really practical instruction on how to build and craft and deliver great sermons that are consistent week after week. I want to encourage you, I want to help you, and I want to come alongside any way I can. You don't need an overhaul, but a few small tweaks might go a long way to helping you be the preacher God made you to be, helping you find your voice, and helping you to serve the people God's called you to lead. So that's what the Preaching Lab Live is all about. To find out more, go to faithfulandfruitful.com/lab.
So as you mentioned, Luke, these examples are coming out of the Preaching Lab. We have an entire section dedicated to intros, illustrations, and in-between. So we're going straight to the intros. And in that, we have 6 examples. We're going to look at 5 of those examples today. What is the topic you want to start with? The category, the type of introduction you want to start with?
The first kind of introduction, I think, is the most common.
Okay.
And that's telling a personal story. This is where you're thinking about something that's happened in your life recently or a long time ago or something that just comes out of your life and you tell it as a story. What's great about it is it's a little bit, it gives people a window into who is this person. Do I like them? Can I trust them? Do they seem like a real person? A lot of times there's an opportunity to use a little bit of humor that, you know, especially people who are new to church don't mm-hmm. actually expect to ever laugh in church. They think it's going to just be serious and stuffy. And so that's kind of nice. And if you're telling a story that then gets into the theme or the topic or the hook, the in, you know, the meat of here's where we're going, then it's a great way to set this up. And so we'll give you an example of a sermon where I did that. This was a sermon related, it was called How to Trust God in Exile. It was from a series we did on Isaiah 50. And so, yeah, here's an example of a personal story introduction.
Amen. Well, this past weekend, I was in Las Vegas, which is where you expect your pastor to be when he's not here. But I was here, I was there for a volleyball tournament, a huge volleyball tournament. My 14-year-old plays club volleyball and volleyball courts as far as the eye can see. And we were there. And I had an experience as I stayed in the hotel that I have at every hotel I stay at, which is I just don't sleep as well as I think I should, right? I mean, you go to a hotel, you're like, oh, this is going to be it. It's going to be a comfortable bed. It's going to be quiet. I don't have children that are going to wake me up, right? Whatever. And yet you get there and you go like, man, I just don't sleep well. And like, for me, it's like, I'm actually used to my mattress and my pillow and my like settings and everything, just at least the first night, it just off. It just doesn't feel right. It just doesn't feel like home. And feel like home. You know, we often say there's no place like home. Well, why do we say that? Well, it was in a famous movie, but why else do we say it? It's because there's just no place like home. I think about it physically, right? You have everything's set and dialed in the way you like it, right? Whether it's the mattress and the pillow, or like for me, there's this spot on the couch. I mean, other people sit there, but they're sitting in my spot, right? The physical reality of being home is when you're physically at home, you can walk around in the dark and still turn on all the light switches. You can still walk around in the dark and not bang into stuff. You know where you are. You wake up in a hotel room and you like, gung, 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 you know, like you're like a human pinball machine as you ricochet into walls and things, right? So there's a physical aspect of being home. There's also just a personal aspect. It just feels right. When you feel at home, you can just take a deep breath. Oh, this feels right. This feels good. You know, when you feel home relationally, you're known and you're understood. You don't feel like you have to be on, right? There's a lot of environments now where it just feels like you got to be on. All right, do I have to be on or can I just be me? Do I have to perform or can I just kind of relax? When you're at home, you don't have to be on. When you're at home relationally, you're with people, they know you and they love you and they see your mistakes and they're gracious. You fully belong. Sometimes you get in a fight, but you work through it because you're okay, because we're at home. Do you know what home feels like? Can you connect with this experience of home?
So even as we're listening to that, you're looking at me like, should I stop it now? Should I cut it now? And I'm like, hey, let it play for whatever you want. And obviously the purpose of this podcast is not to listen to whatever sermon that was. But I think the fact that I was interested, like I heard that message and I'm still interested and I'm like, oh, I've heard this message. I don't remember where he's going to go. And like you had me with the introduction. I mean, there was some comedy in there. I think there's two observations I had or two questions. Number one is that one was longer. And there was some that we didn't play. And number two, there were several little funny jokes in there. And so did you have any thoughts about, hey, this is going to be a longer one. And then, yes, I do need to work some comedy in there. Like that seems like that would be the hard part for me to do. But
well, I think what I was trying to do in this message, in this introduction, was use a personal story to introduce a theme and then build tension around that theme.
Yeah.
And so because the sermon is about trusting God in exile, right? Exile is the opposite of home. And so I was trying to give everyone a sense of, oh, this is why home is so great.
Yeah.
Therefore, this is why it's really hard when you're away from home.
You kind of needed that time to paint that picture.
That's where it eventually went.
Yeah.
But I wanted to start it with a personal story that introduced this idea of home. And then really it's more like, building the tension around that idea of home. So that's what this was trying to do. I was just looking, what's a foot in the door that I can do to talk about home? You know, and I could have done other stuff, right? Molly and I, like many people from Arizona, are not from here, right? So this place here in Arizona doesn't feel like home to a lot of people. When people say, man, it feels like home, they don't usually mean Arizona. I could have talked about that. There's lots of different ways that you could do it. But this is a very common approach and a very effective approach because, as you said, you can use some humor. It lets people get to know you. And it's a way into the it's a way into this theme and this tension that you're trying to build in the sermon.
I thought you gave enough examples of what home feels like. So at least somebody could be like, okay, that feels like home. But there was enough building up that when you made that turn, it was effective.
When you tell personal stories, this is always a tension to manage, is on one hand, you can really go down rabbit holes and be distracting with your level of detail. But one of the things you heard in there was me saying, you know, volleyball courts as far as the eye can see. Mm-hmm. And I'm a little bit trying to paint some detailed pictures that help it just be more interesting. That's not as important necessarily at the beginning because you already have their attention out of the gate. But I think anytime you're telling stories, including little, tiny, not over the top details, just makes your storytelling better.
Here's one little thing that I wasn't planning on saying, but you got me thinking about it and we can move to the next one. If you find yourself telling a lot of personal stories, one way that you can continue to tell personal stories without talking about yourself is just tell the story as if it happened to somebody else. You don't have to make up names. You just say, let me paint a picture for you. And then you tell the story that's yours.
Yeah.
No one knows that you're talking about yourself, but it's your story. And that's a little pivot you can make if you have a hard time coming up with some of these other ones. But let's make these other ones accessible. Humor and shock is the next.
Yeah. So in the last one, there was a little bit of humor. And humor is, again, a fun way to start something. I would say if you're not a very funny person and you try to be funny, it won't work.
Yeah.
So this has to fit. But
you were looking at me a little bit too hard just then. No, I'm kidding.
Okay. Yeah. And so this is humorous and there's some shock value to it. Now, the thing that you're not going to totally appreciate in as you listen to it is that I'm showing pictures, right? And a lot of times visual stuff is part of how you can grab people's attention. We live in a world where people like to see pictures. And so what I do here is I show a series of different pictures and I'll explain, you'll hear it in the introduction. And the last picture that I show is pretty shocking and pretty funny. And what I really like about this overall is it's a little bit of an all ages type introduction. The people that I mention in this are all famous and they're well known, so people can connect with it. It's not a super insidery kind of thing. I'm referencing some people from pop culture and using it to paint a picture that's humorous, funny, attention grabbing. And I think part of what's pretty good in this is it goes pretty quickly into the main idea of the sermon. So this is from a sermon we did called Sin is Big, but Jesus is Bigger. It
was one of my favorites.
John. Yeah. And here you go.
It's great to see you. My name is Luke. I'm one of the pastors here, and I'm part of our preaching team. I want to show you a picture of some guys that I think are really big. These are big, strong, buff guys. Both have a background in professional wrestling. The one you might know from some movies or from if you're a wrestling fan is John Cena. I mean, look at that guy, right? Like if that guy walked in here, you'd go, wow, he's huge, right? And then another guy, by the way, I think this guy will be president someday, Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Someday he's going to run and he's going to win. I think that's going to happen. These are two pretty big guys, right? Like you wouldn't want to have to, you know, scrap with these fellas, right? These guys are big. But I want to show you someone who's bigger. Take a look. That, friends, is Shaquille O'Neal, one of the best NBA centers of all time, who makes John Cena and Dwayne The Rock Johnson look like absolute miniature people. I mean, isn't that just stunning? I mean, those guys are humongous, and like little Dwayne Johnson there between Charles Barkley and Shaq, it's like, oh, The Rock, you're so cute. He's like the Pebble, right? The Pebble, Dwayne the Pebble Johnson compared to Shaquille O'Neal, right? And a lot of times we go through life and it's like, man, this is a big deal. And you got to always go, well, compared to what? Right? Something might be big, but is there something that's actually even bigger? And here's the big idea of today's sermon in 1 John chapter 2, verses 1 and 2, is that sin is big, but Jesus is bigger. Sin's a big deal. Sin is John Cena, Dwayne The Rock Johnson big. It is not anything to mess around with. It's not anything to minimize. We have to take it really seriously because sin is big. But the good news today is that Jesus is the Shaquille O'Neal compared to the Rock Johnson of sin. He's bigger. He dwarfs it and he overcomes it. And so that's what we're going to look at here today.
That one was a lot quicker. It got to the point pretty quickly. And everything in it, like you were saying, like everybody could relate to it because we know who John Cena is, which, by the way, I love John Cena. I love watching anything with, you know, his biceps in it. He's just huge, man. Sure. We all know who John Cena is. We all know who Dwayne The Rock Johnson is, which, do you believe he will be president?
I really do. That's for another time.
That's for another time. And then we all know who Shaquille O'Neal is.
Yeah. And even if it's like, well, someone really actually doesn't know who they are. Well, I'm going to show their picture.
It's right there. You can see it.
And you could hear people's reaction, right? Like you just heard it in the audio clip.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was imagining someone listening. I have the video in front of me, but I'm imagining someone listening who, and you still heard the audience reaction when the picture of, you know, and essentially what's there is there's a picture of Shaq next to John Cena. There's a picture of Shaq next to Dwayne Johnson and Charles Barkley, who's huge. And it's stunning to see them next to each other. You can Google it and find these pictures. But you heard the audience's reaction, and that was like, oh, man, they're engaged. They're interested. And then to be able to pretty quickly hit to that big idea, this is one of my favorite introductions.
One of the things that I really like about this is that it's relatable to where immediately they feel like they're on the inside. They know who these people are. This one in particular, it felt like, I'm comfortable in these shoes. Like, I don't feel like this is an inside joke that I don't understand, that I don't get.
People do not like feeling stupid. If you feel stupid, you are not going to want to do whatever it was again. Yeah. And people, I think, come to church expecting to kind of feel stupid. They feel like, I don't really get this. This isn't really my thing, especially unchurch people. And so, yeah, things that help everybody go, hey, we're all in this together. You're not an insider outsider. Anyone can connect to this. That's really helpful.
I love inside jokes. I'd really like to be a part of one someday.
There you go.
There's some Michael Scott for you. All right. By the way, you'll have to update that illustration and show Shaq next to Victor Wembanyama. Next one, dramatic storytelling. This one's a favorite of yours.
Well, it's a favorite only because it's, as I mentioned a few episodes ago, it's one that I was willing to try. So we talked about finding your own voice and we talked about things that you're willing to try on and how Chris Brown from North Coast Church will open many of his sermons with this kind of dramatic storytelling where he tries to imagine someone in the story or connected to it. And yeah, it's something I do a couple times a year. And in this particular message, this was our last message in our study of the Gospel of John. We did 60 plus sermons on it. And this one's called After You Hit Rock Bottom. It's the story of Jesus restoring Peter. Peter has denied Christ three times. And he's pretty dejected and he's out fishing. And so Jesus shows up and there's some amazing stuff in this story where Jesus is essentially recreating the moment, even down to the smells, right? Like there's two places in the Gospel of John where it mentions a charcoal fire. One of them is when Peter's around the charcoal fire denying Christ. The other one is Jesus makes a charcoal fire to cook the breakfast. And so Jesus is very intentionally recreating this moment to try to give Peter now three opportunities to, you know, say, hey, I love you. And so it's a dramatic scene. It's a heartfelt scene. It's an emotional scene. And it got me imagining what would it have been like to be with Peter in the time between that denial and this restoration. And I thought, well, who would have had a front row seat to that? And so I began to just imagine what would that be like? And I started this message out telling that dramatic story. And so this one's a few minutes long because I try to, you know, bring you into that tension.
Oh, baby, it's good though.
Yeah, this is an attempt at doing this kind of dramatic storytelling. Here goes.
Well, there she was, exhausted, but electrified, lying in bed with her eyes open, reflecting on everything she'd experienced that day. You know those days where you're so tired you actually can't sleep? Well, that was her. What a roller coaster this had been. She's laying there next to her husband who long ago fell asleep. He fell asleep pretty quickly most of the time. And she was so proud of him. When she met him, she knew this was an amazing guy. He was bold and he was courageous and he was going places. But she had never imagined she'd see what she saw that day. She sat there reflecting on how earlier that day he had been thundering away like a man possessed. And thousands of people listened to him and hung on every word and responded to what he said. Oh, what a ride. And it wasn't that long ago where she'd laid in that same bed with her eyes wide open, wondering if he was going to make it through. See, when your bold, courageous man falls apart, you feel really helpless as a wife. And yet this bold guy, who'd had this great nickname, she liked to tease him about it, "Ooh, Mr. Rock, you're so tough." When he came to her, dashed into pieces, a puddle of shame and embarrassment and regret, because he turned his back on his best friend. She wondered, is he even going to make it out of this? And so there she was on the night of this incredible thing, the birth of the church, thousands of people turning in repentance and faith. And she thought, how did this happen? And then it popped in her head. Oh yeah, it was that morning on the beach. That's how this happened. And so today, that's what we're going to look at together, is we're going to look at the morning on the beach. The morning that turned the apostle Peter from being a total failure to being a Pentecost preacher, standing there at the temple just weeks after Jesus had risen from the dead, thundering away, possessed by the Spirit, and thousands of people came to faith. How did that happen?
Did you practice that several times before you delivered it, like before first service?
Yes. Yeah. When I do those stories, I actually write them out word for word. So I don't typically manuscript. I typically just, you know, have bullet points. And I try to write it like I think I'm going to share it. And then, yeah, that is one that I practice out loud multiple times because I don't want to read it to tell a story real dramatically, but reading it feels not that dramatic. So yeah, I do have to practice that. I don't quite memorize it, but I get closer to memorizing it. I have a little bit of background in theater, and so learning lines is something I can do. But yeah, I definitely have to practice that.
The other thing that, just personally, what I want to get better, you've inspired me to do this, but selecting vocabulary, listening to that dramatic storytelling, it was made dramatic because of the words you were choosing to use. You could have told the same story and not used the phrase thundering away. You could have told the same story and not used the word electrified, but you're intentionally picking out these words. I'm asking you, like, just as a buddy, like, how do you come up with this vocabulary to make these things more dramatic and more gripping?
Well, that is one of the advantages of manuscripting. Is, I mean, this is what people will tell you, manuscript is, they really appreciate your ability to be more intentional and thoughtful and specific with your wording. So that is often what gets lost when you stop manuscripting. You know, I don't know exactly in the writing. I mean, in the writing, there's just, I don't know, it's a storytelling and it's probably some gift, and it probably comes from reading good stories and seeing how good authors tell good stories and the words that they pick. So I don't know that I have a real easy, like, here's how to do it.
But that's a good answer, because I've been thinking, like, man, I feel like I'm struggling to get command of the language. I feel like even in this podcast recently, I felt like, man, I'm just struggling to get the words that I really want to use. And one of the things that I've thought is, maybe I just need to challenge myself with some more reading and just increase the vocabulary that I'm putting in order to do this sort of thing well in other areas. So yeah. Is there anything else you want to say about that particular approach?
If it's something that resonates with you, give it a shot, and be willing to fail at it. Be willing for it to be a little bit hokey, but give it a chance. And the real helpful way I think about it is, who are the characters involved in the story? And then who are the characters one or two layers removed from them who would have been affected by this? You know, part of what's nice about it is it's dramatic. It's also, throughout it, people are going, who's he talking about?
What's
going on here? Like, they're trying to connect the dots. And some of them connect the dots sooner. Some of them get these references. They know what you might be talking about it. And so that's a fun journey for them. But also, you can't have too many of those inside jokes where it does start, as we said before, to make some people feel stupid, like they were the last one to figure out who it was. it's an approach that's worth taking. It's fun to do sometimes with Bible stories and sometimes with other kinds of stories.
Real quick, a great reference is Preaching Through Camps and Conferences. If you want more ideas about preaching the same story, but from different angles, if you are looking for, how do I get perspective from other people? We talk a little bit about that in the Preaching Through Camps and Conferences. So just a reference there. The fourth is intense and thoughtful.
This one's a bit of the opposite of the humor and shock, right? The humor and shock is real loosey-goosey and we're going to all have fun. Look at Dwayne the Pebble Johnson. Intense and thoughtful is you're coming out hard. You're coming out serious. We're not screwing around here. I don't think you want to start out this way most of the time. And if you don't start this way most of the time, then when you do, it's a bit arresting, right? It's a little bit like that dramatic storytelling. Mm-hmm. Like part of why I think that's effective for me is because I don't do it that way every time. And people are a little bit like, what's he doing? This is an example of a more intense and a more thoughtful thing. This is from a message called The Transcendence and Tenderness of God. It's from Isaiah 40. And it really is trying to look at how does the comfort of God speak into the pain and the reality of the situation we're in. And so this is saying, we're going to take the pain we're in seriously so that we can take God seriously. And so here's how I started that message.
Well, there are two phrases that I've been hearing a lot in the last couple of years. I don't know that I'd ever really heard them before the last couple of years. And it feels like they just keep picking up in speed and frequency. I'm curious if you've heard these phrases. The first is the age of anxiety. We live in the age of anxiety. That's the first phrase. The second phrase is deaths of despair. I keep hearing about that stuff in the news. We're in the age of anxiety. We're experiencing these deaths of despair, these deaths of despair that especially typically are related to opioid overdose and opioid use, especially in communities that are run down and dealing with problems and dealing with challenges. These phrases we keep hearing over and over. We're in the age of anxiety. We're experiencing deaths of despair. And I hear this, given the promises of a secular world, and go, how can this be? How could it be? I mean, think about this. We have enlightenment. We have technology. We have education. We have science. We have instant communication. We have money. We have internet gurus galore. You can find them anywhere, right? We got all this stuff that modernity and secularism promised. How is it that we could be in such an age of anxiety? How is it that we could be experiencing so many deaths of despair? And the answer is, we're experiencing all this anxiety as a society. We're experiencing all this despair as a society because we've lost God.
With that one in particular, I found myself, I don't remember that message. I found myself as I was listening to that thinking like, give me some sort of an answer as to why you're telling me this. Help me understand why this is relevant. Help me understand what I'm supposed to do with this information and these phrases. And it, I think you nailed it on the head. Intense and thoughtful. Is that what you were trying to get me to do?
Yeah, I was trying to get you to go, man. Yeah, I hear that a lot too. I have heard those phrases, and then a bit of raising that tension, kind of like I did before in one of the earlier examples, where it's saying, you know, why is there this disconnect here? Like, we should not be having all this, given all the promises of a modern world. That doesn't make sense. What's going on? It's that we've lost God. And from there, I'm going to take a turn into how, you know, Isaiah 40 is introducing us to who God is. And this gets a little bit of what we talked about in the 4G episode, mm-hmm. You know, that God is great, so we don't have to be in control. And I'm going to begin to turn into how the greatness of God is actually the antidote to this age of anxiety and these deaths of despair. But yeah, it's coming out of the gate. It's strong. It's intense. It's serious. It's saying there's a lot at stake. And I just want preachers to feel like it's okay to do that. You don't have to start every message with a joke. You don't have to start every message
right
with some personal funny story. It's actually okay. We're preaching as though it's life and death because it's life and death. And it is okay sometimes to say, hey, there's a lot at stake. There's a lot on the line. Now, I don't remember exactly the details of how the rest of this message went. My guess is at some point in the next 5 to 10 minutes of this sermon, there was probably something a little bit funny, probably something, some sort of other story to help lower the tension and relieve the tension. If you start out that intense, it's really hard to keep it that way for that long. At the same time, you don't want to too quickly undermine all the intensity right. you just built by being silly. So, but I just want to give people like, hey, this is an opportunity. This is one of your options is come out of the gate strong.
One observation and one question. The observation, you took the words out of my mouth. I was going to say you've elevated the stakes real high. And so my observation is you need to make the payoff worth it.
Yeah.
You can't do that and then not have good argumentation and not have a strong drive behind here is why these stakes are so high and here's what to do about it. The question that I have is, do you feel uncomfortable as the speaker elevating the tension so much and not like, I think the temptation would be to get silly real quick to let people off the hook.
That is certainly a temptation when it's serious, it is to do that. And I've made that mistake plenty of times. And, you know, I think I've talked about in this podcast frequently after our first service, I'll come to one of our other pastors and say, hey, what do you got for me? And more than once over the years, Matthew or whoever has said to me, hey, you know, you really did a great job raising the tension there, and then you squandered it by being silly or, you know, trying to be too funny or trying to relieve the tension mm-hmm. when you actually needed to keep us there. And so you do have to be aware of that. So that's something to watch out for. But starting strong, starting intense, it's an important thing, and it's a valuable tool. It's a good option. There are times also in the front end of the message, if I know the whole message is going to have a more intense feel, where I'll tell people that, hey, just want you to know today, like we're talking about something really serious. And so I'm not going to try to be overly dramatic here, but I just want you to understand there's a lot at stake. And I think it's okay to just tell people that. People respond well. They know that if you tell them that's coming, then they're ready for it and they engage at that level.
A prompt you've said along those lines is we're going to be as dramatic as the Bible is.
Yeah.
Dramatic. We're going to be as real about this sure. as the Bible is. And it kind of gives you permission almost to
yep.
proceed that way. Okay. The last one that we're going to address here is the question / scale 1 to 10.
So one of my pet peeves of introductions is people that ask a profound question to start their sermon or ask a question that would be like in a job interview, uh-huh. you know, when was a time when you, you know, when was the last time you felt stressed about money? And now I'm thinking
right.
of an answer. And we do it because we think it will be engaging. I actually think it's not. I think it's disengaging.
Yeah.
Because what it does is it forces people into their own imagination that you can actually see their eyes begin to look up away from you. And they're thinking of an answer to the question you've asked because you've just asked a profound question. Mm. But now, rather than giving people 30 seconds to actually think of an answer, because that would be really awkward, you're already talking about something else and they're not listening anymore. And so when I open with a question, I think it's really helpful for it to be actually at the beginning a yes or no type question, or in this case, a scale of 1 to 10 question. The scale of 1 to 10 worked in this as well because a lot of the research that I talk about in this introduction, I'm going to give some statistics, and statistics obviously lend themselves well to mm-hmm. 1 to 10. So it fit on multiple levels. It was a way to ask a question, get people to think really quickly about an answer that engaged them, and then I'm raising the tension a bit through the statistics and the things that I share, and then transitioning into the theme. And this is a message that we did called How to Stop Stressing About Money. We talked in a previous episode about preaching about money. And so this was a series that we did related to that. And this was how I started one of those sermons.
Well, good morning, everybody. It's great to see you this morning. And my name's Luke. I'm one of the pastors and part of our preaching team. And we're a couple weeks into this new year. Hope it's going well for you. My question as we begin today is on a scale of 1 to 10, don't overthink this, just first number that pops in your mind, scale of 1 to 10, how stressed are you? And I don't mean just this moment, but like just in general. Scale of 1 to 10, how stressed are you? You maybe have a number in your head. You know, if you want to feel stressed, here's a recommendation is read the American Psychological Association's press releases about stress. And that will make you feel stressed. You'll find out things like this, that there are 143 countries that were surveyed where they asked people, you know, is stress a significant factor in your everyday life? And in the 143 countries, 35% of people globally said, yes, I'm stressed. I don't know if that seems higher than you'd think or lower than you'd think. If you go up 20% to 55%, now you're at America. All right, so Americans answered the question at 55% of us said that, you know, yeah, I'm significantly stressed. If you want to live in the least stressed state in the country, they say you should move to Montana. I could have told you that. That's not very difficult, but it's a little trickier when you think through what's the most stressed state. What's the highest stressed state? You might think New York. You might think California with all the, you know, traffic. You might think, but you'd be wrong. The answer is Louisiana. They say Louisiana is the most stressed state, which who knew, you know? All right, so you have your number, 1 out of 10. They asked men and women to this question on a scale of 1 to 10, rate your stress. Men on average reported back the number between 1 and 10 of 4.4. Women said 5.1. And so women are more stressed than men. I assume that's because they're carrying all the stress that their husbands don't feel, and they're taking it on themselves, but maybe that's the case. When they rated it by age, this was pretty interesting. Older adults, folks older than boomers, on average, scale 1 to 10, how stressed are you, said 3.3. Baby boomers said 4.0. Gen X said 5.2. Millennials said 5.6. Gen Z said 6.1. That interesting? Now, some of that makes sense, right? When you're in the hustle and bustle of life and you're trying to prove yourself and there's a lot of stuff going on, I mean, that in a sense does feel more stressful perhaps. When they asked people in 2017, what are the things in life that you're most stressed about? 64% said the number one thing, money. The number one thing people were stressed about was money. Then it was work, then the economy, then family responsibilities, then personal health problems. In 2020, they asked people, what are you stressed about? And not just 64% of people saying money, but 87% of people said that they were stressed about the growing cost of everything, which is another way of saying they were stressed about money. So isn't that interesting? We live in one of the most stressed countries, and one of the biggest stressors in our lives is money. And that's what the series is about. And I don't know if you're feeling stressed, but just to help you de-stress a little bit, let's stand up together. Let's stand up. I'm not kidding. Come on, get up. Get up. Wiggle your fingers. Wiggle your toes. Shake it out a little bit. Let's take some deep breaths here together. Inhale. Exhale. All right. Ooh, that felt good. Let's do that again. Exhale. All right, sit down. But I didn't want all my stats to stress you out. I just wanted you to relax. And we're in our second week of this series that we're calling Rich Toward God. And it's basically looking at what Jesus had to say related to money. We're looking at a few different.
Do not ask a question that you do not know the answer to.
What are you, a lawyer?
Right.
That's like, no, I've watched enough Matlock to know about that.
That's a marketing. Well, I'm sure it's a legal thing too, but it's a marketing thing that when you are drafting your landing page, your sales page, whatever the case might be, they say, do not ask a question that you do not know the answer to. And I think that applies here. You knew the answer was going to be yes or no. You knew the answer was going to be 1 through 10. And as you're deciding, do I want to ask this question? Like, yes, I can take the time. I know what the answer is going to be, and that's worth it. That's not too much work for them. That was the first thought that I had after listening to the question thing. You knew what the answer was, and you knew you could deal with it.
Well, and even though I didn't know the exact answer,
right.
Like, I don't know if you said 2 and Sandra said 4. Or like
you knew it was one of those.
I knew it was on that scale.
Right.
And I was going to share a bunch of stats that made it where it didn't really matter.
Right.
Like, whatever your answer was, you weren't going to go, oh man, I'm the worst. I even passed up a joke, right? Because I talked about the increasing stress among millennials and Gen Z, right? And what I was thinking, and probably a lot of people were thinking, I was like, what in the world do they have to be stressed about? Right? But here's what I know. When you're a 20 something and you're a teenager, you feel stressed.
Yeah.
And if granddad comes in and says, you don't have to do anything to be stressed about, I walked uphill both ways to school in the snow, you know, bare feet. Like, that just doesn't, it's not helpful. And so one of the things that, you know, this is just a little side thing, I guess, but like, I want to connect with and reach teenagers and 20 somethings. I think disparaging them is a bad way to do it.
Yeah. Insulting people does not win them over.
So I could have made a good crack that would have gotten a good laugh and the older folks in the church would have loved it. And yet it wouldn't have been worth it, I don't think, for what I was trying to do. But yeah, this is a simple way to do it. And you see there, I raised some tension. I had fun with the, you know, do the deep breath thing. I wouldn't do that very often. Even the like, hey, just sit down, you know, this. So I was just trying to engage people, get people going in it. And I think that's just another example of the options that you have.
Did you want to use the stats? And so you chose to go with the question scale thing so you could use the stats? Or like, how was there any type of intentionality there?
So I knew I wanted to talk about stress because that's what was in this main passage. In this series, we were looking at Luke 12. And in that particular part of Luke 12, Jesus says, verse 22, do not be anxious. He talks about no one can change anything by being anxious. In verse 26, he says, why are you anxious? He says, you don't need to be worried. Don't fear. All right. So he is talking about stress. He's talking about anxiety. He's talking about fear. And I knew, okay, there's a lot of research out there about people being stressed out about money, right? You talk to people who are involved with divorce, oftentimes money's a factor in play. So it was one of those where I went hunting for some stats. I bet there's some stats out there about it. And sure enough, there they are. And, you know, I got to have a little joke about, you know, if you want to feel stressed, read these stats about stress, you know. But yeah, that's why I was looking for it, because this passage then gives you the antidote. Here's how to stop stressing about it. Realize there's more to life than money. Realize God takes care of the birds. Realize that it doesn't actually work. Realize that that's the way that people who don't have God think. Realize that your Father actually loves to give you the kingdom, right? There's all these things in the passage that are the key to not stressing about money. And so I wanted to, again, have a hook that said, hey, stress about money is common and it's normal and it's pervasive. And actually what we're going to see in this passage is it doesn't have to be.
Almost like God is good, so we don't have to look for satisfaction in all these other things. We don't have to stress about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Ah, hey, see what I did there?
Yeah, well done.
Well done. Side note, did you ever see the Kanye West, you asked me a question, and I'm going to use time to my advantage?
I have not seen it, but I am sure you will find it and send it to me. Ladies and gentlemen, you may not know this, but Dave Schrein is like the Wikipedia in his brain of things that at some point have gone viral. So yeah, he's. I know you'll send it to me, and I'll love it.
You'll get it later today. Now repeat the question. Okay, so all right. So just a recap there. You've got several different options that you can have in your toolbox, your tool belt there, your bat belt, personal story, introduction theme, humor and shock, dramatic storytelling, intense and thoughtful, question, scale of 1 to 10. Those are the five. The six that we cover in the preaching lab is more of an all ages thing. And we kind of got that a little bit with the humor shock in this one. Is there anything you want to say before we close out this episode?
Main thing I want to say is that those are not your only options.
Yeah.
Right. There's lots. The point of this is not to say those are the options. The point is to give you examples of lots of different options. I think a lot of times people think I have to start with something funny. I have to start with a joke. I have to start with a story. Or they just forego an introduction altogether. And the introduction is open your Bibles. And again, I want everyone's Bible open. But open your Bibles assumes people are interested. And I don't think we can do that. So this is really just designed to expand your horizons, give you some fresh ideas, give you permission to try new things. And yeah, don't feel the pressure that you have to always start it the same way.
So we tried something new in this episode. I would love to hear if you enjoyed this, kind of more of an analytical. I thought about doing this sort of thing in the past, you know, at the end of season two, we're like, what else do we have to talk about? And so we were brainstorming ideas. And one of the things that crossed my mind is, well, we could listen to some sermons. And one of the things you do in the preaching lab is you evaluate the sermons from the different participants. That's what we do in the live lab. And pastors have loved that. When we get the feedback, that's almost always something that gets mentioned.
So, well, what I look for is moments when guys that are going through the lab, like they've really nailed something.
Yeah.
Because it's fun to show a bright spot and to say, hey, here's something to pay attention to. And then there's other times when it's like, hey, did you notice actually the way you used your hands? Or did you notice how you said that same word over and over within a short period of time? Or one of the things that I was able to do recently with a guy was show him how he actually starts every sentence at the same vocal dynamic.
Huh.
And he was thinking he needed to be way more energetic and passionate and big. And I said, you don't actually, that's not your personality. You don't have to do that. You just can't start every sentence with the same cadence. Mm. And it was actually by watching the film and helping him see that, that he went, oh, wow, I see it now. So yeah, there's something to be able to watch film and use these examples. And hopefully those kinds of things can help us get, like you said, just a little 1% better.
Yeah. If you enjoyed this, please let us know. You can always connect with us, info@faithfulandfruitful.com. That comes to both Luke and myself. We always love hearing from you. To those who have reached out and just connect with us, we actually even did an entire episode based upon folks reaching out. So know that those emails get read. And if you enjoyed this and would like more of stuff like this, let us know. That's it for this episode. A little bit longer, but I think it was worth it. And we will see you on the next episode of Reaching Through Podcast. Peace.